I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. This year, the New York Times ran a two-part series about Walmart's business practices in Mexico. Their first story showed that when the retail giant first learned of widespread bribery by its representatives, instead of taking action against those involved in the corruption, the company opted to shut down its own internal investigation and concentrated on containing any damage that may have been caused by the revelation of bribes. The second story, which was published on December 17th, details how and where Walmart de Mexico spent millions of dollars in bribes to open stores on 19 specific sites, including one that required a redrawn zoning map to get approval for building a store that was barely a mile away from ancient pyramids. With Muck Reads, we like to highlight great investigative reporting, and we were pleased to have our managing editor, Steve Engelberg, sit down with the Times lead reporter on the project, David Barstow, for the podcast. Here's their conversation.
David, you have been involved with one of the most fascinating investigative stories of the year, and indeed of recent years. I think one of the questions that we'd love to hear a little bit about, if you can talk about it, is how in the world did you get into a story about Walmart and Mexico, not an area you'd previously covered?
I'm probably the least equipped guy to do this story. I don't speak a word of Spanish. I've never written a single story in my life about Walmart, and I had been to Mexico once for about 3 hours when I was 19 years old. But we started basically with a handful of documents that gave us a kind of fragmentary glimpses of an internal investigation from 2005 by Walmart, examining or following up on allegations that were made by this guy who had been the lawyer in charge of getting basically construction permits to build new Walmarts in Mexico. And, you know, I looked at these documents, and what I could tell from them was that a couple of things. One was that the guy who was making these allegations, and this is important to me when you're sort of looking at allegations and whether to, like, treat them seriously or not, that number one, he was in a perfect position to know what he was talking about. He was actually in charge of getting permits. Number two, that he was actually incriminating himself, and that meant a lot to me. And the things that he was describing in these documents were things that he had firsthand knowledge of. He was party to the conversation, party to the transactions. And the other thing I could tell from these documents was that Walmart had, at least in the initial go-around, had taken these allegations very seriously. And that was evident from these documents. But what I didn't know was I had no idea how this internal investigation resolved in the end. I didn't know the ending of the story. We knew very little about many of the specifics that he was alleging. I mean, it was like little pieces of a puzzle. But there were enough pieces that I thought, you know, this is something that's worth trying to see if we can tease out a little bit more. And that's kind of how we began.
David, your stories have been about alleged bribery by Walmart of foreign officials in Mexico. Why is that a violation of American law? What is that?
Well, we've passed this law called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and it's a law that says, you know what, if you're an American company and you're doing business abroad, it's not okay to pay bribes to foreign officials to get business. And it applies not just to the American company, but it applies to their foreign subsidiaries as well.
Doesn't everybody pay bribes? Isn't that the way the world works?
It's worked that way for I don't know how many thousands of years. But there has been a kind of consensus, international consensus forming over the last few decades that's been translated into laws in a number of different countries and in Europe that is saying basically in a kind of globalized economy, paying bribes is bad business. It's bad for capitalism. It's bad for a system that allows on free enterprise, free competition. It's contrary to that. And so what we have been seeing on a global basis in terms of a broad trend over the last decade especially has been a kind of tightening up or cracking down on payments of bribes, which of course have been going on for, you know, many, many millennia.
What's your first step in a situation like that where you have maybe some place names, identified a few people involved, and you basically know nothing? What do you do next?
first thing that I did in this particular case is I did the simple things, like, did Walmart disclose anything about bribery ever in any kind of SEC filings? You know, obviously, you do a quick clip search in Mexico and in the United States. Has this ever surfaced in any way? And then I began actually trying to just understand basics about Walmart in Mexico. I mean, I had no idea whether Mexico was a tiny little blip in the Walmart universe or whether it was something more important. And the thing that I think caught my eye early on as I began just looking then, digging into the names that were in these files was one particular name. It was the name of this guy, Eduardo Castro Wright, who had been the chief executive officer of Walmart de Mexico. And the thing that caught my eye and made me intrigued was I noticed that this lawyer had stepped forward, had come forward at almost the exact same, within the week that Walmart was elevating this guy, Castro Wright, to one of the most important positions in Walmart corporate structure. In fact, he was being elevated into a position that would make him a likely successor to Lee Scott, the chief executive officer. And that intrigued me right away because the lawyer was identifying this guy as being the driving force behind many years of bribery in Mexico. And you could sort of intuitively see just from those facts that this must have been incredibly sensitive and delicate at the highest reaches of Walmart for these allegations to be surfacing right at the moment that they're elevating this guy and he's starting to actually get written about as a potential heir apparent to Lee Scott. So that caught my eye right away.
I can imagine. So now you have this interesting problem, which is there's an enormous amount at stake. And I'm going to presume that at least some of the potential key sources in the story speak only Spanish or are most comfortable in Spanish. You don't speak Spanish at all. So how do you deal with that?
You make sure you find a really great reporter in Mexico who can become an important partner in the project, which we are fortunate. We've got a Mexico City Bureau. We've got some incredible reporters who have been in Mexico. And you start asking those folks, who's really terrific and someone that we could use and would get it? And we were fortunate to find this really phenomenal reporter, Alejandra Zanique von Bertrab, who's been a reporter in Mexico for many years and who became really my indispensable partner in this reporting process.
Did you find as you went forward that you were making progress at kind of an even pace on both sides of the border, or was it more that you would leverage something from the American side to the Mexican side and back and forth?
The first phase of this reporting process consisted of lots of weeks of frustration followed by unbelievable breakthroughs. We began with literally a handful of documents. By the time we wrote the first piece, we had accumulated tens of thousands of internal emails and correspondence basically going back and forth between the highest executives of Walmart, which allowed me to actually then use those documents to gain a kind of insight that's rare to gain in terms of like the internal communications between top lawyers, top executives around a very sensitive, top secret internal investigation. And then by obtaining that kind of detail, you then makes it far easier to leverage the information in order to get people to open up and talk to you. It really makes a huge difference when you knock on someone's door if you walk in there with basically a huge binder of documents and you just start showing them their own emails. I mean, that's really the thing that helped us begin unlocking doors in terms of understanding how Walmart was reacting and what they did with this internal investigation. On the ground in Mexico, it was much more of the slow, steady, gradual accumulation of facts. And in that regard, the thing that actually was the most surprising to me and the most important, I think, to our long-term reporting strategy was that it turned out that Mexico has passed a really good FOIA law. A great public records law. They looked at ours. They looked at the problems with ours. They tried to create one that took away some of those you know, the biggest problems being endless delays and no response. And we went to town with Mexico's public records law. We were filing FOIAs in places that had never seen a FOIA before. And we were able to use it with unbelievable effectiveness. For example, in the story that we ran this week, we filed 137 different public records requests just to accumulate the basic permit records for every permit associated with this Walmart in this one town. When it came to the understanding what was going on in Bentonville, it was like a series of huge breakthroughs. In Mexico, it was just trench warfare.
Talk a little bit about going back to the first story, because I think people would see a headline saying there's bribery in Mexico and think, oh, yes, well, you know, dog bites man. But the story was much more than that. The story was, as you described a moment ago, really a kind of look inside the culture of a huge company dealing with a clear violation of U.S. law. What's your sense of why the investigation unfolded the way it did and why ultimately they don't do what they're required to do by law, which is report to the federal authorities that there's been a bribe?
I think there were a number of forces that were at work. One of them is the one that I think that I alluded to earlier on, which was that it was really politically sensitive for the company because this was an investigation that was targeting someone who was an heir apparent or a potential heir apparent for the very top position in the company. Another had to do with a kind of a specific circumstance that was in play at the time when these allegations surfaced, which was Walmart earlier in 2005 had turned in to the FBI, to the federal government, one of its former vice chairmen on charges of basically padding his expenses and embezzling money from his expenses. And they had done this very swiftly, and they had done it absolutely appropriately and correctly. But that decision had resulted in months and months and months of very embarrassing publicity. The vice chairman, you know, in his defense, started making all these very messy allegations about spying on unions. And you could sort of see that the amount of time this was occupying at the top of the company in terms of just mental bandwidth, for them to now come along in a year later, confronted with another potentially very messy scandal involving yet another high-ranking official in the context of a company whose stock was basically flat at that time. They were losing growth in the United States, up against a lot of bad PR over wages and benefits and having undocumented workers doing their night cleaning crews. You know, you can understand why there was a kind of reluctance to take that hard step of going to the Justice Department and saying, okay, uh-oh, we have a real problem. But I think the fundamental point is that at that moment in time, Walmart de Mexico was the bright spot in Walmart's corporate story to Wall Street. I mean, it was the very reason why they promoted Eduardo Castro Wright to this position of making him the heir apparent. It was because, hey, look at the amazing growth we've achieved in Mexico. This is the future of Walmart. This is where we're going to grow.
Well, that's fascinating. You know, one of the things that we should share with our listeners here is the fact that you, David, are part of the New York Times investigative unit, a very sort of robust operation in which you're given the time to explore stories like this, because obviously this doesn't take, you know, a week or a month. So, you know, how long did it take you to pull together the basic outlines of this, let's say, to do the first story? What kind of sort of road was that?
So the first story was, I think I want to say, about 10 months of work. But in doing the first 10 months, we were also laying the groundwork for the story that we just did. The idea of this second story that we did was to actually pick up where Walmart's internal investigation had been cut off and to try to answer some basic questions about the nature of how did this actually work on the ground? What would it actually look like in terms of who got bribed, for what purposes, what did they achieve, and what was the, you know, that's what we were trying to do. We were trying to grapple with those questions. And that meant doing a huge amount of reporting that will never see the light of day, because you can't just focus on one place and say, okay, well, that stands for their conduct around the whole country. You have to actually look at a bunch of different places so that you get to a point where you begin seeing patterns repeating themselves over and over and over again, so that you begin to be able to draw deeper conclusions about what's the nature of the conduct here. And the core question for me in our reporting was this: it comes back to the nature of Mexico. And it comes back to this question of, what was this? Was this a company that was simply entrapped in a corrupt culture where you had to? There was no way to build without paying bribes here and there along the way? Or was this something else? And I think that question was what drove the next chapter of reporting that took us many, many months to complete.
Well, you have me on the edge of my chair. So what do you conclude after all of that work?
What we were looking at and what we kept finding was this amazing pattern where things that absolutely should not have been possible suddenly became possible for Walmart. It was like this land of miracles for Walmart in Mexico. And then we could actually then correlate those miracles against payment records that we had of bribes to these fixers who Walmart hired to actually deliver the money. And you could actually see payment authorized on a Friday and this miracle permit issued on a Monday. And you could begin actually piecing together and seeing that, first of all, the amounts of money were not trivial. This isn't slipping a clerk $100 so that you get a permit 2 days before you're supposed to get it. This was paying a guy $52,000 to rewrite a zoning map, literally to move the lines on a zoning map so that you could build in a place that the legal zoning map said you absolutely could not build. And so we kept finding this sort of this level of, I mean, the way we put it in the story is that they were a very aggressive and creative corruptor of Mexico. They were not some kind of passive corporate victim of a corrupt culture gone wild.
So your sense then, or your conclusion at the end of this, is that this is more an example of people getting things that they simply absolutely, that no one's entitled to, not, you know, as we know, the law actually allows a certain amount of so-called grease payments, you know, mm-hmm. if it's the custom in a particular place to drop off a case of vodka to get your visa, you know, on the right day, people are sort of allowed to do that under the law. So you're saying it's not that at all?
No, it wasn't that at all. That's precisely what we were examining, whether or not this fell into that category of sort of the facilitating payment, the grease payment. You know, the federal government is not going to go after a company for doing that kind of behavior. This was something on an entirely different magnitude. And, you know, the other thing about the particular case that we focused on this week, which was this one store near these ancient pyramids north of Mexico City, was that it actually helps bring the story back to the first story, which is looking at the conduct of the top executives in Bentonville. And the way to explain this is this store that was built in the shadow of these pyramids in 2004 was the subject of an enormous controversy at the time in Mexico. And from the get-go, you had protesters who were alleging that corruption surely must have played some role for Walmart to be able to build so close to this revered cultural landmark. And so at first, I mean, Walmart's leaders in Bentonville were well aware of those protests, and they were discussed in meetings with some of the highest executives of the company. It might have been easy for them to dismiss those allegations in 2004 when they first arose. But now, flash forward a year later, and now you have the top lawyer for Walmart de Mexico in charge of getting permits for this exact store stepping forward and saying, hey, look, here's how we did it, and literally giving Walmart's leaders in Bentonville a roadmap to specific bribes paid for this store that only a year before they had all been talking about as a subject of enormous controversy. Even more complicated is the fact that when this lawyer stepped forward, Walmart was still the subject of continuing investigations in Mexico for this very store. And so the decision that the executives made, not only not to tell the Justice Department, but not to pass this clearly relevant information on to Mexican authorities, is what made this particular episode and this particular store kind of resonate all the more.
And is there any doubt, sort of thinking about the leadership structure at that point of Walmart? You have the senior executives in Bentonville. You have the board of directors. Who didn't know what the deal was?
I mean, there's some very important questions about who on the board of directors, or to what degree was the board of directors, and particularly the audit committee of the board of directors, informed about what was happening in Mexico. And I think one of the things that's telling is, at this point, Walmart's internal investigation is being led by a guy named David Kelly, who's the former U.S. attorney for the Southern District in New York. And he is working not for the executives. He's working directly for the audit committee.
Interesting. Well, we could go on all afternoon about this, but I did want to ask you one other question. It's a little bit, you know, like asking a parent, which of your children do you love the most? David, you've been involved with some fantastic stories over the last decade. You and Lowell Bergman, of course, on the Wayne Pipe Company. You did a fantastic job exposing the generals who were leaving the military service and then lobbying the Pentagon. Both of stories got the Pulitzer Prize. And now this. How does this rate in your experience as a story? How do you feel about it?
This one had the highest degree of difficulty, I think, of any story I've ever done. I mean, because it required, number one, penetrating to the highest reaches of a major corporation, which is difficult to do in and of itself. But then it takes the added complexity of trying to understand a company's operations in a place like Mexico, where the rules are incredibly complicated. You have to understand and learn everything that goes into to a permitting process for a new Sam's Club or a Walmart. We're talking 15 to 20 permits per store issued by different agencies and different bureaucracies. And tearing all of that apart in a place like Mexico and then lining it up against the reporting and the documentation that we're prying loose from the bowels of Walmart to Mexico is a really unbelievable endeavor. I mean, we've at this point, I'm sure I've looked at well over 100,000 pieces of paper for this line of reporting. And so I think in terms of degree of difficulty, it's the most difficult thing I've ever taken on.
Well, it's remarkable. Now, of course, you know, we've already seen the company before the first story, or as the first story was appearing, had to finally make a belated report to the government. The audit committee is investigating. Can we expect to see other impacts in the coming months from the story?
I mean, the amazing thing, it's already had an incredible impact on the company itself. They have hired, I've lost track of the number of very senior people they've been hiring specifically and solely to improve their compliance with the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. They have spent tens of millions of dollars now doing background checks on the lawyers and lobbyists who represent them in front of government agencies around the world. They are training thousands and thousands and thousands of their real estate bureaucrats in their 27 different foreign markets on the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. They have been, I think, and some of this is a kind of standard practice for corporations that are under the gun for FCPA violations, because they want to show the government that, you know, whatever sins they may have done in the past, they're absolutely committed to making sure that going forward they'll be squeaky clean. But it's had already, I think, a very significant impact at the top reaches of Walmart. I think it's also had a much broader kind of impact on the whole discussion around FCPA, whether or not the FCPA should be reformed. And there's been a lot of discussion in Washington over the last couple of years about, well, maybe it's too tough, maybe it needs to be reformed, maybe it needs to be. That has sort of stopped in its tracks, at least for the time being. You know, whether or not it results in criminal charges or fines, you know, who knows? It's just going to depend on these investigations. I mean, Walmart has spent now, just on the lawyers and the accountants and the investigators, $100 million this year, you know, in response to what we've disclosed. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out next year.
Well, we'll be watching. David, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Steve.
That was David Barstow. You can read his reports at nytimes.com. Be sure to check out our daily collection of the best investigative reporting at propublica.org/muckreads. If you see a story you would like us to include, please tweet it with the hashtag muckreads or email us at muckreads@propublica.org. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.